Welcome back to Home in Progress, sponsored by Repco Light Paints and Benjamin Moore. And coming up on today's episode, I'm going to be diving really deeply into color theory, color trends, you name it. Benjamin Moore is going to reveal their pick for the 2026 color of the year on October 16, and the entire design world is watching to see what's coming. And since that's coming up, we're going to spend today talking about why the color of the year matters in the first place, what we should do with the color announcement, if anything, and we'll also make some predictions as to where we think things are going. And to help me do all of this, I'm joined by interior designer Andy Yates. Andy, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure. I'm glad to be back.
Happy to have you back. Happy to talk through all of this stuff with you and see once what your expert mind will suggest to all of our listeners. And I want to start at the beginning. When a company names a color of the year, what in the world is behind that? You know, what's going into all of that effort? What are they after?
So it's a really important question. I think starting with the idea that, you know, our brains process about 80% of the information we take in from our world visually. So we know that the visuals, especially with color, are very important, like you said, psychologically, but also from a marketing perspective and the way that we experience the world. So these colors of the year, while they can be, as you said, kind of dismissed as marketing gimmicks, they do serve a really important purpose. One of the key factors, I think, is just market influences and trend forecasting. So we look at these colors, again, as you said, to influence what's happening in interiors, in fashion, in manufacturing of most all products, but especially those multi-billion dollar industries. They really want to understand what's happening out in the zeitgeist. And I think you hit the nail on the head mentioning psychology, because there really is a component of trying to have a finger on the global pulse, not just in smaller markets like America or Europe, but
so globally,
a large global understanding, right? So there will always be cultural and local influences on cultures. And of course, colors are geographically important as well. So the way you might decorate spaces and wear clothing at the equator, right, in tropical locations, is not how people necessarily experience color in Scandinavia or, you know, the Arctic.
Sure.
So there are factors like that, right? Light, location. But it really is a global endeavor because these companies, such as Benjamin Moore, send out teams to scour countries, villages, markets. They meet with artists and makers
all over the place.
Yeah. And it is a massive endeavor that I think can be minimized if you're just thinking, oh, this is a marketing gimmick to try to sell, you know, teal products or green products. But it really does come from building on years of research and momentum from what's actually happening in the world.
So how do we, you know, take all of that? You know, how does that research that's out there, that they're doing, all of this work, how does that translate into something that we as consumers, you know, actually see or feel in our home, in our products? And I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, you mentioned just now, you know, this isn't a gimmick to sell teal, which almost made it sound like the teal stuff came first and then we want to move this stuff. How does this all translate? Does the color of the year set the stage for what's coming? Does it see what's coming and try to call it ahead of time? You know, what's going on?
That is a very interesting question. I know that there are executives way above my pay grade that actually study this intensively. My understanding of these color trends is really based on looking at the historical data and understanding how colors have shifted through the decades to influence what's happening now and what will happen in color. So a really good example is basically like looking at the 20th century. We had an industrial revolution. We had changes in technology that moved us away from very like toxic dyes and a very expensive coloring techniques to things that the everyday consumer could access. So we had this kind of explosion of color in an everyday market. During times of war throughout the 20th century, and this is still true, we see color trends become more subdued, more calm. We're less loud, we're less bold. In times of economic downturn and uncertainty, we see the way that people feel reflected in the colors they choose to wear and to surround themselves with in their home.
So interesting. Is it somebody who dreams that up? Is it the psychology, which I know we'll get into, of a color, how we normally or just naturally fall into something? You know, the world's stressed, we naturally, is that what's going on? Fall into these more subdued, calming colors? It's interesting. You know, yeah. Think which starts the wheel rolling. But I kind of got a feeling it's the real, you know, we talk about color psychology, and I know that there's a huge group of people who completely, yeah, that's the real deal. And then there's another group who think that's kind of silliness. But it is real, and it really does impact us, and we really do lean towards colors or certain tones in certain times and environments. And I think that's what you're referencing there, potentially.
Right, yeah. And you can look at it in, like, you know, the times between the wars, like the 20s, the times after the World War II and the 50s. Turbulent social uprising in the 60s led to sort of a more environmental awakening and global perspective of the 70s. And then there was a large boom, economic boom, and lots of excess in the 80s. And in each of these times, you see, like, the 20s and the 50s and the 80s, we go back to, like, colors of candy, primary colors, neon colors. Everything's fun and bubbly and bright. You know, we're like, the world's at peace. We're happy. We're spending money. We're not stressed out. In the other times, it's almost cyclical, right? You see color trends become more subdued. We're looking more at, like, naturals, earthy tones. People back off of that brightness and intensity.
We're trying to just blend in with the environment
a little bit,
out of somebody's sight.
Right.
Want to be signaled out.
Yeah. And it feels like there is also, of course, culturally, right? Like, certain people, certain genders, certain ages over historical data, you know, shouldn't, quote unquote, wear a certain color, or certain colors are associated negatively in some way. Well, now it's a whole new ballgame because we have the internet, we have an age of self-expression, more awareness of authenticity and mental health, and people really wanting to feel personalized in their wardrobes and their homes and actually amplifying what they truly love, not necessarily what a marketing company is telling them to like.
Okay.
So both factor in, right?
Sure.
There is, of course, the peer pressure of marketing, right? We set design trends. We're generating consumer excitement. You know, we're looking to influence cross-industry products. All of those reasons why colors of the year are important.
Well, how does this that's kind of leading into this next part. You know, how do these color announcements, you're an interior designer. You know, how do these color announcements influence designers, you know, manufacturers, homeowners, all of us? You know, what do you see when these things come out?
I do see a general affinity for colors when they are announced as colors of the year and when they are marketed heavily, especially in the realms of social media.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. You know, people are inundated with these colors in general. And with a lot of cross-promotional campaigns, you'll see maybe Pantone or Benjamin Moore announce a color, and then a fashion house puts out a collection based around that color. And there's a shoe issued to honor that color of the year. And then an interiors company, a furniture company, you know, creates a whole collection kind of imbuing that sense of it. So there really is a large push for product marketing. But to distill it down to the everyday, when I work with clients, essentially people have color preferences already established. And normally when somebody is at the point of hiring me to help them realize a design vision, they are secure and confident generally in their color choices, that a palette is sort of already selected, pre-selected in a way, for us to use as a departure point.
Mm-hmm.
So we may look at colors of the year Recently, it was, a grand millennial color scheme where a lot of like blush and mauve came back and those kind of peachy pink tones. Mm-hmm. So you would see that like integrated right in a lot of interiors where maybe it had gone, quote unquote, out of fashion.
And you think that comes back just because people are, like you said, inundated with it in marketing. They see it everywhere. And then they think, okay, I kind of like that. Or that's why they're bringing it back. Or that's why your clients perhaps are asking for it. Is that what you're saying?
Sometimes, yes. It's almost like some marketing campaigns, some designers and creative directors will amplify a color and it sort of gives people permission to like it in a way that's like giving, traditionally like men the permission to like pinks and blushes when 100 years ago it was exclusively a color reserved for men, right?
Like
it was
for women.
Pink was a color that was reserved for men because it was considered a softer shade of red, and red was a bold, bright, loud, passionate color.
So 100 years ago, pink was a dude's color?
Yeah, absolutely. Shades of red were really considered risque for women to wear in more like conservative cultures, especially Western European culture, American culture. Now in the Asian market, right, red has always had a different significance. Mm-hmm. And a very large influence in fashion for men and women, like in Japan and China and those Oriental markets. But in Western society, as we talk about it, right, we come from, especially in America, that more conservative end of the color spectrum. So it was seen as pretty inappropriate.
Red.
For women specifically to wear like bold and bright shades. In certain instances, this is all like
a caveat.
Being like, what class are you? What's the occasion? But ultimately, like having those colors associated with certain specific genders stereotypically is fluid throughout the years. Mm-hmm. So the one aspect of color marketing is it might give people permission to use a color that traditionally they didn't feel they had. And I think secondarily, it allows people to explore color in really personalized ways so that I see younger individuals more interested in the palettes of, let's say, the 80s. So like Gen Z is really interested in what they consider vintage, which is kind of like 80s and 90s.
Oh, that's so sad.
Which is the time in which we grew up, right?
Oh my goodness.
But if you look at that cycle in the 80s, especially too, and like some of the 90s, there was an interest more in the color palette of like the 50s. Everybody's kind of looking at what their parents had and maybe grandparents and finding some affinity for
what do you
a
think
palette
that is?
Somewhere.
Why do you think that is?
Nostalgia.
Okay, yeah.
It's a connection to the past and to heritage in some ways. It's also in the cycle of marketing that pendulum will shift back and forth, right? So if you spend 10 to 20 years focusing on gray, right, you have this entire generation of younger people who grew up with like the grayish homes and, you know, lots of stark, crisp whites. And that's, you know, happening for so long. Now when someone is moving out of that phase, they're tired of it. We're also creatures of novelty. Like we love to see things that are new and exciting. We also, some people like change, right? More often than others. So when we move out of those kinds of cycles now, you see almost as a reactionary
We see
aesthetic.
That a fair amount. Yeah.
To be like, oh, we were in a very beige, grayish, kind of sterile palette for a while. Let's move into something more fun.
And that's what I do see. Like you talked about the permission thing. And we always see that play out. You know, you're stuck in beige, but you don't feel, boy, I don't know that I can jump into something else because everybody's. And then all of a sudden, a color of the year comes out that pushes the boundary a little bit. And now you feel like, okay, it's all right to jump out. So the permission thing makes perfect sense. And then the other side of it is I just think sometimes, you know, these color trends come out. And what I get from them is I see combinations or colors that I hadn't thought to think about. You know, it's kind of just presented to. Now, I normally don't jump on it right away. You know, it came out and it hits me and I'm kind of intrigued because it's new. That normally is what happens. It's the novelty of it. but I got to give it a little bit of time to see how I grow with it. You know, is it just the new that's capturing my interest, or is there something deeper? And then I find one way or the other. Whatever I find, the thing that I love about it is just that it challenges me. You know, they're putting combinations together that I hadn't thought about. They're, you know, cinnamon slate. Got that little purpley tone to it. Not something, I never really resonated with it. I didn't hate it, but I certainly didn't put it all over my house. But I did find the interest in just digging into what other people did with the color and what other companies produced, what other industries produced, you know, fashion and you name it. All these things came out with those tones. It's very interesting to see, and it helps me form, you know, and find new color schemes for my own home that maybe aren't anything connected to cinnamon slate. It's a jumping board. So I see all of that play out. You know, what do you guys as interior designers do with it? Do you wait with bated breath to find out what's coming out? And if you do, why? You know, what are you looking for when these colors come out? What does that do for you?
That is a good question. I think as designers, we do want to have an awareness of trends in product as it relates to color specifically, again, because it's a visual medium, right? What we're executing is in the built environment, so it's an applied art. but we see it in, I think, here's my grand take on it. I generally, as a designer and a self-professed nerd, I'm always kind of researching and reading and seeking on my own to understand how to push the boundaries of what I do and develop deeper meaning to the work. And in that, I make very strong connections with clients, because ultimately I want these interiors, whether it's a business like a law firm or a medical office that has to sort of tell a story about the brand and the profession, or a home, right, that's the narrative of this family, this individual, I want it to express them. So I do tend to research heavily in understanding how we can use all of the tools at our disposal to execute that. When we look at colors of the year and trend forecasting, I always think that I'm aware of them before they happen, because
I wondered that.
I'm understanding what's happening in the world, and they really have been more in recent years, especially the last six, reflections of, again, like the climate globally. Mm-hmm. Not like literal weather.
No. So when you see
the political, the sort of human condition climate, right? And generally, no. They tend to stay within a sort of safer realm of selection. Like, I would be shocked to see anyone select like a bright, saturated primary color or a neon color for a color of the year. They're always nuanced.
Oh, for any year.
Right? We stay away from things that were, like, let's say traditionally, if you think about things marketed to children, toys, like fast food, primary colors are generally probably never going to be selected as a color of the year, right? We just have those associations. Mm-hmm. Suffice to say, too, it's rare, but we see it, right? Sometimes, like, blacks and whites are, but they're essentially either, you know, void of color or all colors. So we also don't really tend to live in those areas. So when these colors come out, again, like, I feel like I understand why there's not a lot of curveballs that are thrown. Even this year, the outliers, which we'll get into, aren't really outliers when you think about the larger trends and themes of what's happening in color and what's happening globally. But they are used. And I do see clients who will engage with them in that way.
Do you use them? Do you look at this and say, make these suggestions? Is that how it works for you? You're making suggestions, but you're also listening to what your clients are looking for and trying to find those things. I guess I've always been very curious how a designer who's established, you know, I can see how me, if I wanted to try to be a designer, would love this collection that's put together for me. Oh, look here. But I always wonder, how you guys would use that, because that's kind of what you do. You don't really need them to put it together for you. I'm curious how you guys take this color trends palette that Benjamin Moore is going to come out with, 10 colors and then one star, you know, the color of the year. How do you use that?
I personally love the tools that are given to us by companies such as Benjamin Moore. I think they have invested so much into their incredibly talented teams to create these palettes, and they work beautifully, and it's a wonderful tool to give a homeowner or maybe a client that is interested in a consultation or kind of a light touch style of decorating. It's like these colors work well together, you know, in one space, whether it be like a room or a house, as long as you think about proportion, which is where you might want to discuss it with a designer. It's a wonderful template to be able to give someone. I use them sometimes in that way. I love engaging with them and seeing what they are. I think to specifically answer your question, I will allow them to influence my direction if I feel like it's already where we are with the client. So I meet, let's say, a residential client. I will meet with them. I want to look at their vehicle. I want to know what they chose to drive, what color it is, what are the interior finishes and fittings, like what's the trim level, right? Where do they live in aesthetics, but also quality and function? I want to look at their closet. I want to see their wardrobe. What colors they wear are generally going to be colors they like to see mm-hmm. in their home, and that they already know work with their maybe specific skin tone or their moods. So if they have a generally neutral palette or a palette that imbues very specific shades of, like, let's say it's a red or a green, I might start there, right, to understand if they have a specific... I keep using the word affinity. Let's find another synonym, Dan. If they have a specific preference for certain shades or hue, you know, that's a good place to start. Because if a client loves purple, you're probably going to hit a home run if you use that as the accent color,
sure.
primary color in their residence, which I have... you know, executed before for a client. You know, you're like, oh, lilacs and plums, and what works well with purples? Where do we want a complementary color scheme, an analogous color scheme? You know, so you're thinking, oh, purples and greens, or is it like keep it on the cool spectrum? Let's use purples and blues, and maybe go into a little bit of plums and wines to give it warmth. I let the architecture speak. I understand what the light does in the space, natural and artificial, because lighting is everything. I mean, the only reason we see a color, right, is because it's the
Absolutely,
absorbing yeah. of and reflection of those waves of light. So all of those factors play into it. And I think it helps to understand psychologically where any client is in their specific journey at the time. Is it a chaotic house with a lot of young kids?
So if it is, do you lean into the chaos? Do you find colors that just will exacerbate the chaos? Or do you try to calm it down?
I think both, depending on the purpose of the space, right?
Gotcha.
Yeah. Color serves a purpose. In my mind, all design serves a function. Art, even for art's sake, right? As an artist who is creating something completely individual on a canvas as an expression of self, you know, whatever they choose, when I go to select art for clients, we do this the same. So is the color palette interesting to them? Is it complementary to the house? Does it make sense to have bright colors in like a child's play space or a space of activity and energy?
Is Absolutely. There a yes or no to that question, or is that always going to be subjective? You know, because sometimes people will say, you just, if it's a child's room, it shouldn't have these energizing, you know, we're talking color psychology, the colors that energize. Is that a hard and fast rule that you stick with, or is it kind of just subjective based on the situation?
I will say yes, generally. Bedrooms need to be calm and and spaces where there's not the primary activity is to sleep in a bedroom. Mm-hmm. I was just speaking about this to Good Housekeeping. So I was speaking to the journalist there and quoted in an article talking about the trend of maximalist bedrooms. So we came into a trend of maximalism. Mm-hmm. It became popular again. And with that, there were a lot of designers and stylists who were showcasing very patterned, bright, bold, like primary suites. You know, I would say to the consumer, number one, a lot of these are editorial in nature. Number two, I see a lot of these primary suites in spaces where it's maybe second or third homes. You see them in places where, you know, clients have the ability to have multiple spaces. So there's a sort of privilege in it too. But it's also to sell products in a way. But ultimately, like, the purpose of a bedroom is to sleep. And you want calm and serene and subdued. And if you introduce bright, energetic colors, it's antithetical to the function of the space. Now, maybe you want that in your breakfast room. Maybe you want that in your kitchen. Maybe you want that in your family room. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want it in your child's playroom. But I think we do a disservice to surround children with limited colors, like I had said, primary colors, for example. But that's just because they're so saturated. They're strong, and they're colors that help develop cones in the eye and vision among, you know, infants and toddlers. But we should expose people to the full range of color. But yeah, I think that certain colors, as a quote unquote rule, but let's say a general guideline,
should
be avoided in places where they seem, again, antithetical to the purpose of the space. You know, there was there's been a lot of experiments and examples of this, but essentially, like, yeah, if you paint your bedroom red, you're going to have generally more anxiety / energy in that room. It's just what red does to us. We are primarily, you know, primates who see red as association with blood, right? So it still triggers that in us, right? Like, and it's also a color that increases appetite. So you see it a lot in kitchens because, hi, blood, carnivores, meat, butchering, right? Yeah. And green, like, again, yeah, another appetizing color because we're also like omnivores, right? So you have those sides of it. So there's not necessarily negative associations. They just have really specific connotations. It's a passionate color.
I had red
color
in my bedroom, but then we installed a refrigerator right in there. It took care of everything.
It's a passionate color, right? It's a very sexy right color, red. But, you know, you say like orange, again, or like really bright colors that are in that warm spectrum. We love them, but they do psychologically, at a very base level, they emit like waves of energy. This is like literal, I don't too metaphysic, but they literally do. So if you want to go into a gym and you want to be energized to work out, use those bright, hot colors. Absolutely. If you go into a spa and you're, you know, you want to relax, get a massage, facial treatments, everything is more subdued. It's eucalyptus, it's water, it's calming, mm-hmm, for a reason. A lot of experiments in the 70s, I think I remember, they were like painting prisons different shades of pink and like buttercup and lilac. And they saw a significant decrease in anxiety and aggression among inmates because they surrounded them with these colors that naturally imbued that sense of calm and peace. And it works.
No, I think, yeah, it's something that seems a little out there, but really not when you think about it. Because as you're describing a gym, and you talked about, you didn't describe it, you just said a gym and a spa. And instantly, I've got colors, you know, my brain, when I think of a gym, I'm not covering those walls with blue, you know, light blues and soft greens and stuff like that. That's not even remotely what I picture. And a spa, I don't picture anything with orange, reds, you know, any of those, without even thinking about, oh, what I'm trying to do color-wise trying to create calm or anything. It's just my natural leaning is the spa is going to have this oceany kind of a, you know, neutrals and blues. And it's very, I think it's something that we all inherently know, whether we know it or not. We lean towards that because it's built into us. It is how it works. It is how we perceive color and what happens to us psychologically.
Literally genetic.
Yeah.
And it is an important facet, I think, that maybe the general public isn't aware. But color consultants, specialists, experts are hired in literally every profession. You know, I specifically design interiors and sometimes products, and maybe I'll work with a company on branding. But essentially, one of the most important design elements, right, when we talk about contrast and scale and proportion, color specifically, it's used by everyone. So, you know, in any type of publishing industry, in any manufacturing industry, in any, you know, medical professional services, everyone has someone helping them decide what colors are correct to use.
Correct to use. It's not just stuff that looks good together all the time. You've got a mission or a goal with this product or with this space or whatever, and there's certain colors that are going to help you get to that mission, achieve that mission, and other ones that might not work as easily towards that. They could all look good together.
Right.
But you might end up choosing colors that don't accomplish what you want. So let's zero in on 2026. You know, you've been looking at the announcements from different brands. What are the big unifying themes that you see showing up this year as we're looking at color of the year and what it might be?
So to piggyback on our discussion of these colors sort of referencing the pulse of the culture, we are definitely in an uncertain time, let's say, without diving too deep into it, right? There are chaotic elements at play in society and in politics. We've had some really volatile years, especially in America, where things seem to be a little uncertain, I think, right now for people. Not that I'm trying to be pessimistic, but it's the world in which we live is a little less certain, a little rocky right now. And we see that reflected in the polarization of kind of like not just the punditry, but there are people on the margins and they seem to be very loud, right? So there's this chaos. There's a lot of noise. We're inundated with information right through TikTok and the global news cycle. And now more than ever, I think because the planet has become smaller for everyone and we're very aware of what's happening globally, and we're also more aware of what's happening domestically, it is a kind of contraction into these themes for 2026. So we see a lot of earth-inspired tranquility. We're looking at timelessness and comfort. We're looking at these thoughtful nature-first applications. Essentially, the colors of the year and the way that things have been kind of trending for the last few years are that people want to feel more comfortable, safe, and secure in their homes specifically. They want to feel more connected to nature. There is a cloud of climate change and uncertainty hanging over us. So there is almost in this biophilic trend, like the deep desire for people to return to nature in ways that are executed in their interiors, right? So they're reflected in the colors, the textures, the shapes. We talked about this in a previous episode where we were looking at the explosion of biophilic design, organic shapes, really natural textures. This is also a reaction to people having a deeper understanding of what chemicals have kind of been introduced into our products and our bodies over the last 100 years, right? And And there is a level of discomfort with that. So yep. people want to go back to like fewer ingredients, less ingredients, more natural products. You know, they want to know what's in their paint. They want to know what's in their upholstery. They want to understand
those
things.
Deodorant, Andy, just because.
I don't know what's was not going to say anything, but this very small, warm studio.
Yeah, I wanted to let you know because I could tell you were trying to get further and further away. But
no, but that
it's just my concern.
And it's true, right? We're seeing that in, you know, the rejection of kind of plastics and certain ingredients in plastics and looking at people being aware of what is in the products that they use, the food they consume, and how that's reflected in color trends is very, very obvious.
Well, how? Because I'm completely, help me see that, connect the dots between what's in my food to color trends.
Right. So the first thing I honestly thought of when you said that was mac and cheese. Like, there is an unnaturally orange color to what is essentially, you know, a pasta and a cheese. And there's a kind of disconnect in that that we feel like that's artificial.
Yeah. You make homemade mac and cheese and it never right. looks the same.
It's never electric orange.
And my kids have always said, how come yours isn't the right color?
Right. And I'm sorry to I don't mean to call them out specifically, but
I'll bleep that.
Right. So let's say like generic brand. But there's a sense of understanding like artificial ingredients tend to amplify and saturate and intensify color in food that you wouldn't normally find. So this backlash right against dyes, preservatives, things that we really don't necessarily need for nutritional value. It's the same in color. And there is also, to tie it to the political and kind of uncertain aspects of society right now, we're seeing people and these forecasts want to be a little safer. So we're going back to nature, you know, kind of like retreating back into our caves and our villages, right? Like thinking about that from a primal perspective.
So more subdued color. That's what you're seeing.
Absolutely. It's definitely a very natural palette. It's definitely a palette that references the arts and crafts movement of the early 20th century, which was a direct rejection of
Victorian
industrialism and Victorianism, right? Like the ostentatious nature of those bold, bright colors, which were, as we were discussing, kind of only reserved for the wealthy because those dyes were very expensive. Also turns out some of them, like arsenic, were extremely poisoned and getting, you know, lead-based paint.
Well, we did a whole...
tinted with arsenic. You're like, it's beautiful.
One of my favorite episodes that we ever did on the show was probably 5 years ago. I don't know, more than that. But it was wallpaper that was arsenic... You know, that's how they got that green.
Yeah, we talked about that.
And there's literal cases where it killed people.
Absolutely.
It's even suggested it's possible that this is what killed Napoleon, because that was in the room where he was ill. He was already ill in a room surrounded by arsenic-laced paper in a musty, damp environment, and it's just putting it in the air.
Right. It
so,
definitely
all those,
did.
Yeah, crazy color. Right. You know, dyes, all this horrible stuff used to get to these colors. So you're seeing more subdued... tones. That's what you're predicting for Benjamin Moore, and that's what you're seeing. Now, I know there's some bold outliers, though.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned those.
So I did aggregate the colors of the year already announced from other companies and brands for 2026, and the definite theme is this return to a very natural, earthy, craftsman, arts and crafts kind of William Morris palette, right? So if we look to what that meant, it was that rejection, as we said, of industrialism and the sort of sterile nature of the blacks and grays of the industrial world, plus the ostentatious nature of kind of the garishness of bright colors of like the now fallen monarchies and dynasties of the past. So in Western culture specifically, right, what, you know, William Morris and those of that ilk did was to go back to using old techniques, using natural products, stained naturally, you know, letting, let's say, a species of wood like red oak be red oak, not trying to paint it or kill that natural pink hue with a color. It was about the authenticity and expression of materials from nature. And that is absolutely a trend with 2026. We see a lot of brown as the new black.
Okay.
And beige, let's say tan, linen, white as the new white, and zero gray. There's virtually, like, the backlash against gray is actually quite strong. And you see it in these colors because they all have warm, rich, earthy brown undertones. And if there's any whites, which there are a couple, they're really creamy beiges. They're earthy tans. We see colors like red browns, brick browns and reds, walnuts. You know, there's one plummy kind of color announced already, Graham and Brown. And greens and blues, and even the ones that are outliers, as you mentioned, like, you know, there's a teal from one company, but it's not that bright, and it still aligns with the idea of a teal that you would see in nature. It's not like a radioactive, intense, saturated, highly primary color. None of these colors are saturated. They're all very earthy. It's like you would go in your backyard and dig in the dirt and, you know, go into the forest and you see all of these colors, rich brown reds, greens that are earthy, ochres. So I'm very curious to see if Benjamin Moore will align with this palette. I feel like they will. I'm not a predictor of color normally, but I feel like that they will introduce a color that blends right into this very earthy, subdued, calming palette, right?
Do you have a family that you think it will come from? I'm not going to make you name a color.
Oh, I did the research. I looked at some.
Oh, so are you prepared to name a
color?
Well,
for Benjamin Moore, right, you mentioned
Cinnamon Slate was last year.
Was last year. And so they were kind of already ahead of it, right? You think about the color of cinnamon, that kind of brownish red, yep, earthy, yep. And slate adding a little bit of depth of blue-gray to it. A beautiful color. So will they introduce something this year that's in that vein of like a brown, red? Probably not. I think
they did it already.
They did it. And yep. The year before it was a blue, and the year before it was a red. So I don't think we'll be seeing like maybe a brown red hue or a blue.
Mm-hmm.
We may see a green or a green based hue. Like I looked at Mediterranean teal is a one, Hidden Falls. They might be in that realm. They're also, it might just be like a tan or a beige.
Yeah.
Mansfield tan, Twisted Oak Path are a couple that I looked at and thought, you know, maybe these ochery, rich, warm, gold-based tans and beiges, because that's definitely where we are. It could be just a linen white. You know, we see that stark whites, cold whites, gray whites are out. Blue-based whites, anything cool. It's sterile. People don't want it anymore. I'm painting an entire house, literally every wall, ceiling, an inch of trim, every door and every window, all three stories, linen white. That these clients just purchased. It's everywhere now because we want that warmth again. We want to see that.
So linen white, for the people out there thinking, yeah. Help them understand what a linen white is.
If you look at flax, you know, as a cellulose material, so flax as it grows, it's kind of warmish gray, right? Used to make linen thread. And so when it's just a natural linen without dye, it's a very warm, very earthy white. It has a lot more gold in it and a lot more warmth, right? So it is reflecting warmth back in any Kelvin color temperature. So in really bright daylight when you're at like 4,000, 5,000, like 6,000 Kelvin, really bright white, blue light, linen white will still look warm. That light, unlike more neutral whites, like the blue lights, bluer light won't cool it down. It will remain warm. And then in very warm light, like back to 2,700 Kelvin or that candlelight glow where there's a lot of orange, it's even warmer.
Mm-hmm.
So when you add enough of that to a white, you know, it stays warm regardless. We're looking for whites that feel like
warm
that now.
And, okay.
Yes,
so
definitely.
Thinking about this as we get to the end, if somebody's listening right now and they're thinking about working, you know, a color of the year into their own space, how do they approach that? You know, the announcement comes out on October 16th. And they're ready to move on that, or they're really ready to, you know, look at those colors and start working. How do you suggest they do that without overdoing it, without, you know, jumping into something that's maybe a novelty that they, you know, who knows if it's going to be a novelty. Maybe it's going to be exactly what you're saying, and we kind of all have been sliding into this. It might not be as novel as I'm suggesting.
I'm very curious, actually, just to wrap that up forecasting. Yeah, when I was looking at it's beiges and tans, it's red browns and it's ochres and, you know, kind of a couple of plums and teals. I'm very interested to see what Benjamin Moore has chosen. So for the average consumer or for the seasoned professional, you know, designer or product developer, I think understanding that the color of the year is part marketing campaign, part reflection of society. Ultimately, I would say if you like the color and you personally enjoy it, perhaps you consider using it somehow in your home, in your wardrobe, maybe looking at pieces of art to introduce to your collection that have that general palette. I'm seeing a lot more in art and in these kind of color palettes to go back to what we would say is like a desert palette almost, like those kind of beautiful desert colors of the Southwest, but not as saturated. So the fact that I see so much more art and fashion reflecting that, I think if you like the color, if you enjoy the palette and you want to use it, figure it out. You know, paint an accent wall, paint a small room. Paint a large room if you really love it. I always think with color, especially with paint, it's so easy to buy. It's easy to change. It's easy to experiment because you can get Benjamin Moore peel and stick samples. You can get pints of...
Yeah, those little samples.
And just paint 7 or 8 shades of it on a wall. That's the great thing about these colors when they're announced. You know, let's say it's Benjamin Moore Mansfield Tan 2026, and you're like, I like it, but it's a little yellow, it's a little blah. You know, go to the website, search it. They're like, here's a lot of shades and tints of that color. Here are colors that complement it. So they're going to give you a lot of tools to be able
right.
to integrate
even
it.
Even the color trends, seeing colors that work well with it.
Right. And the whole palette is revealed.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can work with those colors, but you can do the same thing. Like, okay, I don't like the main color, but let's find some variations on that. But some of these other colors, it can help you, okay, well, maybe I'll look at this kind of a tone, but try to find another version of that that will work with the new version that I picked. I mean, it just gives you a starting point, like a springboard.
It does. And if you're paying attention, let's say if you're listening to this show, you're interested in home improvement, maybe the business of home, DIY, these subjects. So maybe you're already aware, but anyone paying attention will see like the color palettes that's come out for 2026 is like going back to a kind of like 2000 Starbucks. Like we want that feeling again. Earthy, warm woods. We're seeing a lot more cherry and brown in kitchens again. We're seeing these brick tones and these linen whites and these ochres and these eucalyptus greens, right? Like that's what that feeling of like a warm, cozy cafe was when the company kind of exploded, right? And you remember feeling that and thinking, yeah, this is cozy, this is warm, this is comfortable. And then as we shifted away into a lot more like pale oak, a lot of black, a lot of white, a lot of gray, it was sort of reflective of what was happening. But we're now back. Mm-hmm. And that was only referential of like, right, the sort of vegetal autumnal colors of the 70s, which was really just referential, again, of the arts and crafts movement.
Right.
Which was really just referential of living in nature,
right.
like most people did.
So many different things. It's so cyclical.
Yeah.
We've got the big announcement coming October 16 for Benjamin Moore. You know, other people have already released their colors. Andy, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, because you do, I mean, all kinds of stuff. Your interior design, like you mentioned it, you'll help people with a lot of different things relating to color. They want to reach out, how do they best find you?
I can be found on all the socials at Andy Yates Design. And my website is andyyatesdesign.com. I'm happy to speak with anyone if they're interested in talking about color. I have color consultations and understanding really just how to use color in your life to better enhance not only your daily living, but reflect who you are. This big trend in general with color is about personalization. So if you don't like the specific teal that Company X has come out with, maybe you use it to find the version of blue-green that speaks to you. It could be brighter, it could be darker, it could be less or more intense, but ultimately, that's what I do. I help people work out these issues. So if you want to reach me, I'm available.
All right, we'll put links in the show notes. Thanks so much for hanging out.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. This was great.
And that's going to do it for this episode of Home in Progress, sponsored by Repco Light Paints and Benjamin Moore. If you enjoyed today's conversation, be sure to leave us a good review. It helps other folks find the show, and I really appreciate the help. Also, consider subscribing to the show, and you'll never miss an episode. All right. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next week. I'm Dan Hansen for Home in Progress. Thanks for listening.